We're back. You know, sometimes the off-air discussion is just as exciting, more than the on-air discussion. Really, actually, when I'm looking at this, we're now getting started in the program, but there's so many issues emerging. There's actually this WhatsApper is saying here, good morning, Corey. I can identify with the statement the gentleman making about the wheelchair users. My mom is a wheelchair bound, and it is very difficult for her when we go certain places for her to move freely. She herself would like to come out on her own, but can't because the road, the sidewalks are very bad. She finds herself getting exhausted fast because of the difficulty of having to be going around the holes in the road and avoiding certain places and so on. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I must commend the association that brought to us, Walk in the Day in the Shoes of the Disabled and the Blind, when they came out and you had to be blindfolded and walk through town and so on and so forth. I took part in that in the first year, and for me that almost brought tears to my eyes. I think it is those types of experiences along with these types of discussions that start to open up the eyes of persons of what really, really happens. Because we look at this on a cursory or in the periphery and not understand that these are the daily experiences of people. Mm-hmm. Now, y'all think and deal with these all the time as a part of the program. I want y'all to put what are the best practices going forward? What is the best solution to the transport? What message do we actually send to? Because these issues don't only affect the disabled. Transport affects everyone in Barbados. Mm-hmm. The potholes certainly affect every single one in Barbados, the sidewalks, etc. So what message do we send to the policymakers, and how do we actually get these things resolved?
The first message I would send is this: inclusion. A lot of times, you see, the thing is, these issues that we're highlighting, they, as you said, they don't affect just persons with disabilities. They affect many members of the society. Unfortunately, when we try to fix some problems, sometimes we don't remember to include the other sector of the community that it also is impacting. And so that's what we call for, inclusion. Let us be at the tables, let us have discussions, let us be a part of it. And persons with disabilities too can also be educated about how these things affect others. Sometimes you don't realize how much a situation is impacting other people because it's so much a part of your reality. And we need to sit down together and have these discussions and understand what is going on. That's the first thing. It's not the only solution, but that's solution number one. Make sure that you include persons. Because sometimes you may be bringing a solution to the table and you think it's going to work. And all things tell you it's supposed to work. But when you test it out, when you really drill down, as you like to say, Corey, it doesn't reach who you wanted it to reach. And that's because you didn't start by asking. And that brings me right back to what I started by saying in the first place. It's not that we don't want help. It's not that we don't value people's assistance. It's not that we don't think. All we ask is that you just do that. Ask.
All right, let's tap back over to the telephone lines and say good morning and welcome to our next caller. You're on the air.
Blessed morning, Corey.
Hi, blessed morning.
How are you?
I you know, I always smile when I hear your voice. I'm fine, thanks. And you?
I am improving.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I want to, me and my friend was only this morning discussing about disability. And one area, sometimes I was telling her, I usually call a call-in program. And before the person know I had a disability, I was allowed to speak. But I find when the person found out, right, they kind of caught you short, because they think that when you have a disability, that your brains are gone. You don't have a capacity to do things. I don't know if it's conscious or unconscious that they do it, but and she said the same thing. She went and did something, and they, instead of, they hurry her to, and other people was in front of her who didn't have a disability, and it took, the person was relaxed and thing with them, but with her, they hurry her to, and she said that when she tell the person that, they said no, but I don't know if it's unconscious or conscious they're doing. And the next thing, we signed the Geneva Convention. I would like our government not only to sign it, but to see, to put in law that you do not have disarmed credit. You do not have, when you go for a job, right, you can get a job and people will not, you know, disqualify you because of your disability. Because signing it is one thing, but putting it in action is another. And that is what a lot of disability people face, that they can't get jobs when they apply. Even though they have the ability to do the job, they cannot get jobs. We have to depend on disability money when we come in. And we don't want that because we're able to work. Because not because you're blind or because you have a disability, you know, you can't work. We still have brains and we still have talent. And sometimes we can do the work more, because when I was working, even though 3 months after my eyes was like this, I was doing it excellent and people were congratulating me. But still, I was laid off. And I understand the West Indies is like that. So I would like our government not only to sign the Geneva Convention, I would like that they put it in action and do not discriminate no disability person when they turn up for a job. And if it's in law, they cannot discriminate. Thank you.
I thank you too.
Yes, can I just follow up on that? Mm-hmm. You can hear, you can sense the frustration in the voice of that last caller. Mm-hmm. She's expressed discovering prejudice and discrimination of employers who think that because she is disabled in some respect, that she can't do a job. And it's absolutely incredible that in this day and age that we still have this attitude. And the attitude is wide-ranging. Mm-hmm. Disabled people, and I'm sure my two colleagues here will back me up on this, disabled people want to take part in education and employment and a social life, the same as everybody else. And when they are not allowed to, you have two societies developing. And it's incredibly unfair. We've just been told about how much and how difficult it is to get a taxi or a bus, even from up the road down to here. Now, why should that be? It's a story which repeats itself year after year after year. Mm-hmm. And I don't see any real improvement, except that I think about 2 weeks ago in the House, Minister Ryan Strawn got up and described his experiences over the past decade. I understand that his son is 9 years old, he related. And he talked about his experience as a parent of a disabled child and the amount of difficulties that he had as a parent, and which is reflected in every other family of disabled persons in Barbados. And now it's as though everybody's realizing that when somebody gets up in the House and describes these things, that, oh, this is official. But this has been going on for years and years and years. In the same way as it's impossible sometimes for a disabled person to find a disabled toilet in a building. Mm-hmm. It's the fundamentals of life which are not being addressed.
You know, Corey, I just wanted to say one thing too. I go back to that person on your blog that said it sounds like we're always complaining. And the person that said that we're citing anecdotes and bringing one issue. But for we all, it's not just that we are citing the challenges that we have had. The fact that we are able to sit here today and have this discussion openly represents a step forward for persons with disabilities. Years ago, we couldn't have had this discussion. We could tell you that there are years that we could not get this kind of open, frank discussion.
Yes.
So we're not saying that things have not gotten better. They have. We have had several opportunities. I can sit here and tell you story after story about really good things. Only last Thursday, for example, we had an example of the outpouring of support by one organization where a group of blind people, we went on our sponsored walk, and every year for the past, can't remember how many years now, we've had the support of the hikers, and they walk with us every step of the way, and they have just as good a time, and in some instances better than we have. We have those examples. You participated in two of our organization's activities earlier this year, sharing your experiences. So we do have positives going on. So we don't want people to take away from this that we're citing that, but these kinds of conversations, we're not having them to sit down and
complain.
No. And we're also not sitting down and saying everything in the garden is roses. Because if you think everything in the garden is roses, then you're going to think, right, my job is done. It is not. There's still another part of the garden that needs work. That being said, there are, like I said, there are a lot of good things that have been happening. We have students with disabilities who have thrived. I have, up to this year, young people who are doing exceptionally well in mainstream education, who have varying types of disabilities. One young man who, after his first year in secondary school, placed second in the whole year in his form. So I'm not just talking about second in term, second overall for the whole year with a disability. Fantastic. That is great. But along him, alongside him, there are other children with disabilities who their teachers don't know how to cope with a student in their class, and they are frustrated. And we need to talk about that too, because we need people to understand that these teachers, they need support, they need assistance, they need understanding, and they need training.
Well, Corey, I want to really look at the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I want to cite Trinidad, because Trinidad, the government of Trinidad and Barbados, Trinidad and Tobago.
Don't do this yet.
I was thinking.
Give it time.
They have legislation that facilitates parents who remain at home with their children with disabilities to obtain a monetary monthly benefit, because they recognize how challenging it is for the parents to raise that child with a disability, particularly if they're not into school, not being admitted into school. And secondly, they realize that if this, maybe, as in most Caribbean countries, this single parent household, the parent isn't working, that this will lead to deeper poverty for the family, and by extension, a heavier pull on the government finances. They recognize all of that and have set up a scheme that allows the parent to receive a monthly benefit. And this is the direction I would like to see Barbados go, because we have lots of parents who have children with disabilities that are remaining at home. They cannot work because employers are not right now ready to give way, if that's the correct term, to parents being able to come in at maybe 9-10 o'clock and
or work from home
mm-hmm. or work, you know, a specific time a day to really allow them to cope and manage their child or children with disabilities,
so that we look towards the whole end result, the productivity, as opposed to the stringent timeline. Now, even before you said the word poverty, my ears were pricked, right? In terms of, I like to see things through in a systematic way. So let's look at the whole issue of the stay-at-home parent and how we can help as a society facilitate that. Do we know the number of persons that will fall into this category? Do we know the number of disabled persons? So that we can put together, we can put a costing, and we can put a paper to the Minister of Finance, to the Minister of People's Empowerment, to say, can you include this in your estimates for next year's budget? You understand that is the sort of way I think that we should approach these situations, so that we can actually see a resolution, so that we can actually get a yes or a no, as opposed to saying this would be nice, you know, and kind of wishing it into being. So the question is, do you have an idea of how many disabled persons we have registered in Barbados?
Well, first things first, we don't have a registry of persons with disabilities. The National Disabilities Unit, they do have the records of the clients that they see, and they do have records as relates to other, some persons have registered, but as it isn't mandatory, we don't have a register. The census, that is another area. The census does take some issues, some questions with regards to disabilities. Right now, they're working on the process to make sure that they've got all the questions that they need to have together and stuff. So they're dealing with it. But we can't pull it out and say right here, yes, Corey, we know that it is X amount. Mm-hmm. What we can say, though, is that the figures are there to be explored. The research, there is a lot of...
From the last census, yeah. Kerry, the 2010 census, mm-hmm. they were estimating just over 11,000.
Yes, 11,142, right? Something like
right.
that.
Right. Yeah. Prior to that, the 2000 census had estimated 13,000
right.
plus. Right. So now in 2020, I am appealing to parents, people with disabilities themselves, everybody, when the enumerators for the housing and population census comes around to your house, please acknowledge and reveal that there is a member here with a disability.
Yes.
That helps, as you're talking about, Corey,
yes.
in really being able to say, look, we have this number, mm-hmm. and this is the type of funds we need, mm-hmm. the type of finances we need to really sustain mm-hmm. parents, children with disabilities, education, health care. Whatever the area.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is so true.
Yes, if I can just quickly say, all disabled persons should go down and register with the National Association of the Disabled. And that would give you straight away a fairly good profile of just how many people, as well as what different types of disability mm-hmm. there are. Because as you can see, there are all... a complete spectrum, a very wide spectrum of disability, mm-hmm. whether it's physical or intellectual. Mm-hmm. And right now, we don't know. I couldn't tell you, I'm sure you're going to ask me sooner or later, I can't tell you how many autistic spectrum people there are in Barbados. And when I say people, I say people specifically because they're not only children, but they're mm-hmm. also older, mature people out there as well, still with the disability. Mm-hmm. And autism, as with blindness, it's a disability for life. Mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. don't cast it off when you reach 21 or when you leave school. You suffer with it, and people have to look after you, or as it's been explained, carers have to look after you. Mm-hmm. And of course, the unspoken question is then, what happens when your carer or your parent dies?
Mm-hmm. Which happens really often.
And what happens? Let me ask that question.
What happens?
Yeah.
Well, Corey, it's often a sad, sad, sad reality. Some persons, after their parents have passed on or their caregivers, they end up in
a nursing home, geriatric hospital,
psychiatric hospital,
or just wander.
Or as well, in the old days, as I'm sure it still applies now, because it's the easiest thing to do. You get shuffled around between your relations, your sibling,
exactly.
or a distant relation,
precisely.
Or you go to live with a friend who's kind enough to look after you.
Mm-hmm. And that's about it.
And straight away, your weight is then transferred to somebody else.
Exactly. And I like that word you use there, Frank, weight, because weight suggests burden. And that's mm-hmm. that's exactly what people see it as, a burden, right? I always say my disability is a challenge. It is nobody's burden. And I say it's my challenge because it is what I live with every day I wake up. I interact with and encounter other people. And from time to time, they work with me and they help me out and they deal with me. But it's not only about that. It's also, but when you have a situation where this person is just seen as an extra weight, an extra burden, and you're shuffled from place to place, it does become challenging. But back to your question about figures, Corey. The World Health Organization estimates that 1 billion persons with disabilities live in the world. Out of the 7 billion, that is 1/7 of the world's population live with a disability. And 80% of those live in developing countries. Which brings you to a very interesting reality. It means that Barbados, at least a tenth, 10% of our society is what they estimate lives with a disability. Now, depending on your categorization of disability, that number can go up significantly. But those are the kinds of numbers. So while they're not a ball, while they're not spot on figures, those are the kind of estimates that you can work with. And I might also hasten to add, sometimes people think it's stay-at-home parents, but it's not only parents that it impacts on. Disability also impacts on siblings and children, right? So when you're thinking about, there are people who have family members with disabilities who can't work because they have to be there to help care for that person.
I'll tell you, I wasn't prepared for this program this morning because I'm saying I came here, you know, thinking we'll talk about, you know, policies and so on. But when the reality really hits you,
it's the most wide-ranging problem you could ever think of. It's a societal problem.
It is.
And I think that's part of why people find it so difficult to comprehend. Because, okay, you might be thinking of a solution for the blind and visually impaired, but some of those solutions may not be appropriate for children with autism. It may not be appropriate for a child or an adult with a learning disability, right? So you have to find many solutions for many types of disabilities. However, there are some general solutions that will work for everybody.
Exactly.
And that's changing the attitudes. That's also making sure that you have universal designs where you know for sure the doorways are wide enough. The toilet facilities are appropriate for the wheelchair users, for the old lady or old gentleman who may be frail and not able to bear their own weight but can use the grab rails in the bathroom. So it's what I often say, whatever solutions are designed for people with disabilities benefit the entire society.
Exactly. I'll give you a visual if you need one, Corey. There's a very famous picture with children. Fair enough, this isn't a Barbadian reality. It was a snowdrift and there was a staircase and a ramp. The child in the wheelchair is at the bottom of the ramp and the other children are waiting at the foot of the stairs. And the child with the wheelchair is trying to get the person's attention who's shoveling the snow because they're shoveling it off the stairs. And his little speech bubble says, "Hold on, when I'm finished this, I'll deal with you." But did you get the corollary of that one, Corey? Okay. If they shoveled out the ramp, all the children, including the child in the wheelchair, could use the ramp. But by shoveling out just the stairs.
Nice one. Good one. Good one. Good one.
there are solutions to this. We're not just making complaints.
No.
There are, in the more developed countries, there are what are called sheltered accommodations, which give supervision more or less according to the disability of the person, so that disabled people can achieve a level of independence and achievement and can feel that they are not a burden on people. There is a project in London called the Tower Project, which started about 10 or 15 years ago. And they promoted the idea of sheltered accommodation for all sorts of disabled people. I refer to this because they do have a lot of autistic, intellectually challenged people as well. And straight away, they are able to achieve these normal levels of independence and achievement, the same as the rest of us do.
All right, we're going to go to the line shortly because all the lines are taken and people want to get in. But I want to back up something Carrie-Anne said earlier when we have one of our persons here telling me the visually impaired had their hike with the seasoned hikers on Emancipation Day and said it was a really, really good outing.
It was.
So, yeah, so they're reminding us of of that. We take a break and then we go to the back to the lines. It's just gone 2 minutes after noon. And this is Brass Tack Sunday in association with Williams Industries Incorporated.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful Permaclad U-Panel and R-Panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joins from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory-painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices. Delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas 425-2000 or Lowlands Christ Church 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tack Sunday, where we are talking to Yudalee Wickham Ashby. She's the president of BARNOG, the National Organization of the Disabled.
Vice president.
Vice president. See, I give you a promotion without permission, you know, okay? Vice president. The president must be going, woo. Frederick Johnson, he's the president of the Autism Organization of Barbados. And of course, we have the president of the Barbados Council for the Disabled, Carrie-Anne Eiffel. We say good afternoon at this time, and we welcome yet another caller to the program. Good morning, or good afternoon, and welcome, rather. Good afternoon. Yes, go ahead.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Also, I'd like to offer my sympathy to Miss Belisa for the family. She was a great leader. She was instrumental in a lot of things, even to make sure person with disabilities has water tanks in their home, because she sees the problem when the water is shut off. The great difficulty of disabled person has catching water. So that is one of the things that she does. I sit here and listen also. First, gonna act on a person with cerebral palsy. A lot of persons do not know or don't educate themselves about cerebral palsy. Even myself, I had to educate myself about cerebral palsy because of all the things that people can say, which means we can actually mention what people can say and make you feel that you're less than a person because the way you speak. And that is one of the discrimination. I cannot give myself all the credit, but a lot of able-bodied persons help me to where I am today because they see something in me that I don't even see, including my wonderful family. I hear crazy statistics, and I keep wondering if statistics really matter. We know we have disabilities. It don't matter if it's a 100 or 1 million. We need to look at the solutions. When I speak about disability, I speak from the child to the grave, because we keep looking at just a certain, we just speak worry from the child to the grave. What happened to that child? What happened to that young person? There's some disabled person that will be lucky to go to university and get degree and get master's and even have a family. There's some that will not be that lucky. Where those people go? Where those people go? Where they need a shelter? And I hear the gentleman speak about children and local family. Yes, you might say children, but sometimes it's something that is that disabled person.
All right, seems we have lost her. I wanted to interject with Rosanna, explain her why I believe that the numbers are important. And as Yudlin said, in terms of planning, no, on the same discussion, I'm happy to say we've seen some persons even start to turn the corner already. And that's when I tell you, I feel that I got out of my bed and had a program on this. Because a gentleman was on the program saying, okay, why would they need buses for 50 people? And someone said, no, it isn't more than 50. The person said, well, it's got to be hundreds, not thousands. And then Udaline said 11,000. And then they went like, ooh, what are they counting? And then someone else on the blog said, well, you have to understand the different types of disabilities. So even education is going on as we are having this discussion. Mm-hmm. And that is why those numbers are important, so that you can put priority. If you think that you have five people, you're not going to invest in a bus. But if you know you have 11,000, you understand you have enough to invest in numerous buses. And that is why these numbers are important, so that we can plan and come up with the right program, the right size, the right fit for what it is that we're dealing with. We take another call because, as I said, the board is entirely full. So I think we have Rosalind back on. Let's try. Yeah. Good afternoon.
Yeah. Hello.
Right. I was making the point why numbers, I hope you are hearing me, why the numbers are so important.
You have a good point. The reason I so, because I know for years the numbers was always the bigger picture. The bigger picture. How many disabled persons that in the country recently, and we don't even speak about freak accidents.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, I knew a situation that really hurt my heart. When a young fellow was on a chain working, and this is something that we don't even hear about, and the chain fall in on him, and now he is paralyzed, only 28 years. And talking and listening to one of the family, they don't know the extent of that disability. They don't know the front of that disability can. They don't understand the whole life as a young person that might live to the next 20 years. You know, and so that's what I am telling.
I understand that part. Whether it's 1 or 5 million, we need to treat to the one. Because remember, they say in democracy, the important thing is how you treat the least among you, the minority, not the majority. And that is important. The other thing I want to underscore is the importance of interacting. And Kerry made the point. It's the same lady that talked about the hike that explained to the persons on here that you are 2 winks away from a disability at any time.
Absolutely.
You understand? Yeah. People believe that this is something you have to be born with. But as you say, you can slip, you can fall.
Mm-hmm.
It is just a second away. And that's how we've had to see it.
Not but just a slip or a fall, Corey, but with the increased violence we are seeing in our society, you can, a stray bullet can hit you and you end
up paralyzed.
You can end up with all kinds of other issues. You could be in a car accident, anything like that. That is what the Caribbean Development Bank, they did a study some years ago, and they were looking at disabilities. Now, the two biggest contributors to the disabilities these days aren't people being born with disabilities. It is the non-communicable diseases, which we hear about all the time, and
diabetes,
healthy living and all of that.
Hypertension.
Yeah, all of those, and the increase in violence and road traffic accidents. Those things are impacting on disability. So it's not just the thing. So my friend there, Rosalind, she is making some serious points.
And I'm going to get off. And we speak about the younger person with disability. There's two things, family and younger disability. The younger disabled person has to educate to that when we, the older person, gone, to tackle the matter, use the information, the knowledge that they're getting, that when the older person go, because they will be always disabled, they will be always, it can never go away, so it don't stop at us. Just like any other younger person, get up, join the conversation, join the different group. Next thing will tell us also. Yes, I listen to Unity Talk, Lord. And I'm what they do for the parents. Lord, I think parents also need to find their child weaknesses and sense, as well as their weaknesses, and sense for that child and little things, little quality skills that when you're gone, I know that all the schools in England, we are the same on the Sunday, find the skills. Even the teachers get to make a cup of tea, find the skills of that child, that when you're gone, that child can at least make a cup of tea for it, because these